Hey guys, what's up? I'm Ian Barber, and with me today is Ryan Blygeron, and this is the Lone Red Seat.
What's up, guys? As always, Lone Red Seat is brought to you by Standing O Sports. Visit them at standingosports.com.
Yeah, guys, and definitely be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. We'll throw a link in the description. You can go subscribe there if you listen to podcasts through iTunes. And, you know, we got a great show for you today, guys. If you're sick about hearing about Donald Sterling, you've come to the right place because it's going to be Red Sox, Red Sox, Red Sox. You know, we're going to talk about the Blue Jays series, but first we got to get to we haven't done a show in a while, so
yep,
let's talk
blame.
About...
I'll take the blame there.
Yeah, definitely. You should take the blame for that. He's been dodging the Lone Red Seat for days, but I got
10 hours of sleep in a matter of 3 days, so I feel like
college, man.
I should get a little sympathy.
I don't give you a lick of sympathy, but let's get into the Michael Pineda Pintar saga, because we haven't done a show for we're wicked late to the party on this, but we're going to talk about it anyways, because we need to talk about it, right?
You can't not talk about it.
No, I would love to talk about it. And so let's get, I mean, you guys all know what happened. Second inning, Michael Pineda. First inning, he's clean. And
clean,
then,
gets shelled, boom. Got
right,
a pine
right.
tar in my hand.
Gives up a couple runs, so he says, all right, let's throw some pine tar on the old neck. And, of course, the Ness and cameras were all over that. I mean, you knew they were looking for it right from the get-go, and they found that. And it was so funny listening to Don Ursula and Jerry Remy just be like, oh, what do we got here? Looks like some pine tar. They were so happy. And I was actually happy, too, because I was just like, oh, my God. I knew it was about to just blow up, because the first incident of the pine tar thing, it just blew up the internet, basically, and he didn't even get ejected or anything, so I knew that something was about to happen, that something huge was about to happen right when the Ness and camera showed the pine tar on the neck.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that it's ridiculous that, I mean, this was, 2 weeks removed from when it was the biggest storyline in baseball, and this guy thinks that he can just get away with doing it again? I don't know. But actually, what I want to talk about is the idiotic Red Sox fans who were criticizing Farrell for going out there and calling him out for it. They were like, oh, he's pitching terrible. You know, they should have just left Pineda out there so we could have hammered him. But people don't realize that he didn't have pine tar in that first inning. And that's when the Red Sox did their damage. And he was coming out in the second inning, and he was getting guys out. And that's when he was cheating. So, to say that Farrell shouldn't have come out there is just downright idiotic.
Yeah, and you also got to take into account, that pretty much effectively ruined the Yankees' bullpen. I mean, obviously, they took three out of four in that series still, but, it just ruined their bullpen. Everyone who is not an idiot is pretty much in agreement that Farrell had to do that. I mean, even Brian Cashman said he had to do it. But, so, let's get that out of the way, and let's move to, a different topic in this sort of area would be what I don't understand is John Farrell goes out there and he said in the press conference, and he goes, or last time this happened, he said, I don't mind if you do it, but you just can't be so blatant.
Right.
And what I would say to that would be, what does it matter if he's being blatant about it or not?
So my take on this is that it's MLB's dirty little secret that everyone uses pine tar, and that apparently, because, I mean, Johnny Gomes and Ortiz and David Ross, all these respected Red Sox, came out after that for that first time and said, we don't really care, whatever, guys do it. So, it's just kind of baseball's apparently, I didn't know, but, apparently it's a pretty common thing. And so, I don't know. I mean,
I just think there needs to be more legislation. I mean, other people have talked about this, too, and it's just, you can't have so much gray area. There kind of needs to be a black and white thing, because, the media is going to sit there 1 week and say, oh, well, this isn't a big deal, because everyone uses Pintor. And then the next week they rack Michael Pineda for being an idiot, which he is, but
yeah.
It's also kind of hypocritical because it just has to be black and white. There can't be so much gray area. Like how, you know what I'm saying?
No, I totally agree. I mean, I don't think that it's cool that MLB has this as a, I mean, boom, this guy gets ejected as, as soon as the umps, you know, realize that he does have Pintar on him, boom, it's an ejection. Like, why should other players who aren't as blatantly obvious be able to get away with it? It's like,
no, they shouldn't.
It's like steroids for pitchers. I mean, kind of, right? I mean, am I too far off on that? I mean, it's like,
I mean, neither of us are cheating. Neither of us are Major League Baseball pitchers, so I don't think either of us can say how much it affects the way you pitch. But the general thing from hitters seemed to be that they didn't really think it affected it that much. But on the other hand, pitchers wouldn't do it if it didn't give you an advantage.
Right.
So
I mean, maybe it's not to the degree of steroids, but I'm just saying that, like, you know, hitters resort to steroids, and apparently pitchers are resorting to Pintar. But you have to you can't penalize them differently. You can't say, oh, well, you know, pitchers need this for grip. Well, hitters need this to hit the ball over the fence. It's like, you're right. There's too much gray area. And I mean, like we said, we're late to the party, and nothing's really come out about this as far as like a rule change or anything like that. And I think that baseball needs to come out and own up to this and talk about what the Pintar rules are going forward.
Yeah, and we could really talk about this pretty much all night, but obviously we won't waste your time. And I think an interesting thing you just mentioned about baseball and you need to take a look at a rule change. Another situation that happened with the Red Sox, actually in the Orioles series, was the Pedroia transfer play, where he had the ball solidly in his glove, and then lost it on the transfer for the double play. And in accordance with the new rules, which I honestly wasn't even aware of, because it's been called one way for pretty much as long as I've been watching baseball,
right.
According to those new rules, the Flaherty, I think it was safe on second. And then pretty much immediately after that, Joe Torre came out and said, well, we're going back to the old transfer rule. This one's garbage. There's too much gray area.
Yeah.
So how could they act so swiftly on that and just, you know, turn to... I guess they just... It's a good old boys league, and they just don't want to take the Pintar away from pitchers. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get how you can eject one guy and then have the rest of the league saying, you know, it's not a big deal and whatever. It's either an ejectable offense and it's cheating, or everybody can use it. You can't have this... Oh, if you get caught, no, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and so that Red Sox Yankees series was, I mean, it's probably pretty exciting to watch if you're a Red Sox fan. I mean, a Yankees fan, but for Red Sox fans, it was brutal. I mean, that last game, dude, Mike Karp pitched. What?
Speechless, dude. Speechless.
I mean. You know my feelings on Mike Karp. I hate him as a hitter. I hate him as a hitter, and I hate him as a fielder. And now he's going to go out there and add pitching to the resume. He had some heat, but, man,
Tossed a no-hitter.
Yeah, 5 walks in 1 inning, though, but did give up less runs than Craig Breslow. I'll mention that. So in that game, the Red Sox had 5 errors, and... This isn't just a new thing. Like, this wasn't just the Red Sox had a bad game. I mean, they've looked pretty gross out there.
Yeah, I don't really know what's going on. I mean, we've talked about how exciting it is to have albeit the poor defense hasn't really been entirely when this unit's on the field. We talked about how we were very excited to see a Victorino, Jackie Bradley Jr., Sizemore outfield, Sizemore has been pretty awful out there. He's looked pretty lost, you know, turned the wrong way on some fly balls. the catching, you know, David Ross has been a great catcher last year, and he's really looked pretty pitiful behind the plate, you know, defensively, not in his game calling, but in his actual defense. And, you know, Pierzynski as well. And then, you know, when Napoli's not over there at first, whoever's filling in has been awful. There's been a lot of criticism of Xander Bogaerts saying that he's, you know, too slow at shortstop. So, I mean, five errors is just, it's downright gross baseball to watch. There's nothing more you can say.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems like every time the Red Sox make an error, the other team scores off it. It's not like sometimes you'll have these errors where, you know, two outs, guy gets on, and it doesn't mean anything. But, like, these errors are costing the Red Sox games right now.
And they're ugly errors. Like, sometimes you're like, all right, that was a tough hop or whatever. But these are just flat-out bad baseball plays.
Yeah, and so what I think has a lot to do with it is the kind of, like, revolving door the outfield has been. Because, I mean, it's one thing if you have a left-field platoon or a right-field platoon. A lot of teams have that. But I think it's kind of unfair to the players to have, like, Grady Sizemore one day play center field, one day play right field, and one day play left field. You know, he probably can play those positions all equally, but he's just not comfortable with playing. You know, it's about comfort. And we had such stability there on the, I mean, last year, every day you knew it was going to be Ellsbury in center, Victorino in right, and then Gomes, Nava in left. And that didn't really change other than injuries throughout the whole year. So hopefully we'll start seeing some stability in the outfield. And as far as Xander Bogaerts goes, I mean, he's looked bad, but I'm not really worried on that. I mean, he's only 21 years old, and all he's going to do is get better.
Yeah, I'm not sold on this whole we need to move him to third and trade Will Middlebrooks.
God, no.
I'm not.
No way you move Xander to third. His bat's way more valuable at shortstop.
Yeah, and I'm not. they trade Will Middlebrooks. You know how I feel about that. So.
So yeah, that's going to do it for the Yankees series. Talked about everything you can pretty much talk about there. So, and Shane Victorino actually comes back at the tail end of the Yankees series, and we've been talking a lot about his impending return for a while, and we thought it would have a huge effect on the lineup just as far as having a consistent presence at the top of the lineup. But John Farrell doesn't actually put him in the leadoff spot, and, you know, we've talked about this leadoff spot so much, and we figured that this would finally bring stability to it, and it hasn't. He's not the leadoff guy.
I wouldn't say it hasn't brought stability. It hasn't brought stability that we thought it would bring. I mean, Farrell has come out and said it's going to be Pedroia and Victorino in that order, and we're just going to see how that works for a while. And it's like, okay, why not just flip it, you know? That's what it was. I mean, Pedroia is a lot more comfortable as a two-man, and Victorino has bad leadoff. So it's like, you know, why not just flip them? And I don't know if he will down the road, but I don't agree with how it is now. And I think that Pedroia is a much more valuable hitter in that two slot.
Yeah, I guess it just doesn't really make that much of a difference to me. Like I said, we've talked the leadoff spot to death. But as far as guys, whether he's batting one or whether he's batting two, I don't think it really makes that much of a difference to me. But another guy that came back is Will Middlebrooks. And I know you love Will Middlebrooks, so I'm going to let you have this one.
Yeah, I mean, this guy returns. You know, always been a great Rogers Center hitter.
He loves that blue Rogers Center, doesn't he?
He does. He had three home runs there last year, just missed a fourth. Goes 2-for-4, you know, in his first game, hits the ball hard, and then hits a nice big home run in that second game. It's just nice to see because we were seeing no power out of that third base spot, and to have that power back, and that power back down near the bottom or middle half of the lineup is key to have because we were having, you know, when you go, I mean, Herrera and Jackie Bradley Jr. and Nava, I mean, that's just those guys were hitting so badly. So to throw Middlebrooks' bat down there towards the bottom of the lineup really sparks that bottom half and keeps that momentum going through the entire lineup.
Yeah, for sure. It was great to see Will Middlebrooks back in there. And so he came back in the first game of that Blue Jays series, which Red Sox won 8-1 in another great start by Jake Peavy. And, I mean, is it about time that we just say we just give this guy his respect? I mean, we've been pretty hard on him.
He's got a lot of movement on his pitches this year. And really the only time that he's gotten into trouble is when he can't even control how much movement he has. But he's looked very impressive. And we're a month into the season at this point. So hats off to Jake Peavy because he surprised me and he's proved me wrong.
Yeah, definitely. I've been wrong, too. I mean, I'm still being a hater. I still don't know. I still don't think he's going to keep it up. I just don't believe it after watching him last year. But we'll see. I mean, Red Sox win that first game 8-1. And then the second game was actually pretty interesting. You know, he got Clay Buchholz, who it's a freaking adventure every time that guy goes out there these days. And so Red Sox actually – Clay Buchholz goes – 7 innings, 3 earned runs, which isn't great, but it's a lot better than what we've seen before.
And worth noting, he gave up all 3 of those runs in the first inning. And I'm, you know, on Twitter, I've got, you know, Red Sox beat writers who are saying, you know, put this guy in the DL and call up Workman, move Capuano to the starting rotation. I mean, they were ready to write this guy off and send him on the DL for a little while. And then he comes out and just shuts down the Blue Jays offense for the next 6 innings. And he really looked really good in those last 6 innings after looking completely lost in that first inning.
Yeah, needed 3 pitches to get through the 6th and 4 to get through the 7th. He only threw like 94 pitches in that game. So kind of encouraging stuff from Buchholz. And I actually want to address that point you just made about people saying he should go on the DL and stuff. And I'll be the first to say that Buchholz has looked pretty much disgusting for the entire year. But there's this myth out there that his velocity is what's causing all of Buchholz's problems. And I actually just going to throw like a bunch of stats at you guys real quick. It's going to be a lot to take in, but it'll all make sense later. I pulled up the pitch effects data from his start April 14th of last year against the Rays, in which he went 8 innings shutout. And his fastball average velocity was 92.7, maxed out at just under 94. And for this last start against the Blue Jays, his fastball velocity was average 92.6. And actually maxed out higher at 94.7. So in all the other pitches pretty much echo the same kind of thing. Like his sinker, his changeup, they're all right on par with what his career velocity has usually been. So I don't think arm strength is the problem, and that's why I don't think a DL stint would even help him.
So what I want to say is, You can't deny the stats right here. The velocity was the exact same as it was last year right around this time, but it wasn't in those first few starts, and that's what had people worried.
Yeah, and so I think you still saw him give up some really hard-hit balls in that Blue Jays game. I mean, obviously he got the quality start, but still gave up some really hard-hit balls. And that has a bit to do with his stuff not being that good. I mean, the break, the horizontal and the vertical break on all his moving pitches isn't exactly what it was last year.
Yeah, he's looked really flat this season for the most part. I mean, he's had some, you know, he has his innings, he has his times where he looks like the Clay Buchholz of old, but he's definitely looked pretty, his pitches have looked pretty flat for the most part, and he hasn't had that, he's left a lot of pitches up in the zone, which...
Yeah, missing high, yeah. Dude, he does it all the time. It's so annoying to watch, is he just miss high, and every time he misses high, he falls off, and I don't know why he does that, but... So, actually, it was good to see some encouraging stuff from Clay Buchholz, and I'm not ready to write him off. But no, I know a lot of people.
I mean, I think that had he you know, given up another few runs after that first inning and been pulled, you know, in the third or fourth, I think we could have seen a DL stint, because how long can you really leave a guy out there with the arms that we have in AAA? But he held his own in that final six innings, and he's earned himself a couple more starts.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that brings me to the next point where you're talking about AAA pitchers, because a guy that I am done with and am ready to write off is Queen Felix, Felix DuBrant. I'm done with him, man. I get the stuff argument, and he has the best stuff on the team, Ian. Yeah, I know he has the best stuff, but this is like year three or four of the Felix DuBrant experiment, and he's improved marginally, but nothing that I think merits him staying in the rotation.
So what do you want to see happen?
I actually have a name for you. His name is Ruby De La Rosa. Probably just butchered that first name. It's probably like Ruby or something like that. But that's actually the guy I would want to see up there. He's down in Pawtucket. He's made 5 starts. He's got an ERA just over 2 and a whip under 1. And the reason I'm throwing the De La Rosa name out there over an Alan Webster, over an Anthony Rinaldo, who are definitely more promising prospects, is that you're not losing anything if he comes up there and he can't perform. Because I saw Alan Webster come up last year, and I think his confidence was shot. I think he just couldn't handle the big leagues. And that's why I think that they should call up De La Rosa. And the main reason I think they should, I just want to see him call up someone.
Okay.
Because I don't want to see Felix DuBrant in there anymore.
But what do they do with DuBrant?
I don't care. I don't care what they do with DuBrant. I'm sick of him losing us games and not showing any sort of improvement. I mean, he had a decent year last year, but I don't get their infatuation with DuBrant.
The problem is they're going to lose him if they can't send him down. So they can either put him on the DL.
Or bring him out of the bullpen. He's pitched out of the bullpen before.
All right, so then he'll just kill us in the bullpen?
No, just waste away as a long reliever like other bad pitchers do. All
right, dude. Well, yeah. I mean, I sort of agree, I guess. I mean, I think the leash is very short, so I think that, you know, if he keeps tossing, you know, 5 innings of 5-run ball, he's done. But I do want to say that De La Rosa came over in that trade with the Dodgers that involved Agon, Carl Crawford, and Josh Beckett. So, I mean, that's...
And Alan Webster.
Yeah, that's good to see that, you know, that trade is really paying dividends, because it was really more of a salary dump than anything else.
Yeah, and so that's all I'm going to say. I think I said plenty on the Felix DuBrant, on how I feel about him staying in the rotation. So let's get to the third game of the series. Red Sox, this game looked more like the Yankees series. I mean, Red Sox had another chance. They came into this game at 12-13, and they had another chance to get to 500. And a stat that I actually looked up, I created this stat myself. I'm kind of proud of it. I mean, some other people probably already knew it. But I was looking at the schedule because I said, damn, how many times have the Red Sox had a chance to get to 500 and they just haven't done it? And the answer to that would be 0-6. Red Sox, since they went to 2-3 against the Brewers, they're 0-6 when they have a chance to get to 500.
That's promising.
Yeah, and I mean, there's nothing we could say that's statistically going to explain that, but it's if anything, it's frustrating, because in any sport, 500 is kind of a number that if you're above it, you feel a lot better about yourself.
I mean, no doubt, and the Red Sox were playing damn good baseball, and the Blue Jays weren't, and this was a winnable game. R.A. Dickey is not good. John Lester
is not at all.
Very good. And this was a game the Red Sox needed to win. And, I mean, can we talk about the lineup that John Farrell tried out there?
Yeah.
That was
Sizemore's second, man, and he has been struggling.
And
struggling.
And Sat, Ortiz, and Bogarts, I think.
Bogarts actually played in this one. He sat the previous one. But so he had Pedroia, Sizemore, Napoli, Pierzynski, Middlebrooks, and then you get into like the dead part of the lineup with Gomes, Bogey, which Bogarts batting seven is a conversation of itself. Like, why is that even happening when Sizemore is second? But anyways, and then they have Bradley and Ross. So yeah, that was a pretty bad lineup, and it probably shows why they only had one run on the board.
Yeah, sorry, sitting Victorino and Ortiz. So I mean, throwing out a pretty dismal lineup, and they just couldn't get it done against R.A. Dickey, and that sucks.
And when everyone's been able to get it done against R.A. Dickey.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of been the Red Sox season, I guess, is everybody beats up on another team, and the Red Sox just get hammered by them when they come in.
Yeah, this game was actually pretty close until the seventh inning. It was really close until the seventh inning. And then,
well, I mean, you got John Lester on the mound. Of course it's going to be close.
Right, and so Lester gives up a couple runs in that inning, and I mean, I'm just looking at the pitch count at 122, and do you think that Farrell might have left him in there a little too long?
I mean, the bullpen had kind of been, beaten up
taxed
a little bit, and he didn't want to – Tozawa and Uehara, apparently, as good as Middlebrooks is in Rogers Center, Uehara and Tozawa are equally bad. So, yeah. I mean, to try to get through three –
balls fly out of that place.
Yeah,
man.
To try to get through three innings without them, I mean, you got your ace on the mound. I guess you probably talked Farrell into it, and it happens. I'm not going to fault him for trying him back out there for one more inning.
I'm never a person to say that. I've always thought that the 100-pitch count limit was stupid, ridiculous.
Guys used to pitch on 3 days rest and throw 150 pitches.
Oh, yeah. So I don't really have a problem with him going to 122. So Red Sox dropped that game 7-1. Drop a chance to get back to 500. Yeah, and so the Red Sox welcome the Rays to Fenway with a three-game set. Obviously, they need to win all three to get back to 500, but should be looking to take at least two out of three. Got Lackey against Bedard, who actually pitched for the Red Sox a couple years ago, and he's a joke. He can be had. So Red Sox have a decent chance in that one. And then you got DuBrant, Queen Felix going against Chris Archer in game two, and I'm actually pretty excited to watch Chris Archer pitch. I mean, I hope he pitches like crap, but he's just a fun guy to watch, you know?
Yeah, that's going to be that could be a tough game for the Sox.
Yeah, I hope Felix gets out of the second inning in that one. That'd be really sweet. And then you got the man, the best pitcher on the Boston Red Sox, Jake Peavy, going in game three against Ramos, who I'm going to click on his player card right now because I have no idea. Cesar Ramos, 3.38 ERA is actually not that bad.
Dude, classic Rays pitcher.
classic Rays pitcher just come out of nowhere to contend for the Cy Young. I might be putting a little out there, but hey, when Cesar Ramos is getting that award at the end of the year, you guys are going to be saying I'm a genius. Anyways, Jake Peavy going against him in the Jake Peavy going against him in the final game of the series, and I'm glad that you didn't bring it up, but I'm going to bring it up because this is the 180 that this is the 180 that Ian's brain has done in the last week. I actually sent out a tweet that said David Ross plus Felix DuBrant equals Yu Darvish. Since then, that tweet has been deleted. Anyways, Red Sox with the three-game series against Tampa, they'll look to get above 500. They need to win all three games to do that. Ryan, do you think they can?
No.
No, you don't think they can. Do you think they take two out of three?
I do. I do think they take two out of three, but I don't think they can. I don't think Dubron's going to out-duel Chris Archer. The Red Sox bats are really going to have to come to play in that one. Hope the Red Sox win that one 7-6 or something like that. But
yeah, they might have to get like one or two hits with runners in scoring position, right?
Yeah, it'll be the first time this season. So no, but I mean, in all honesty, this is a series the Red Sox really need to take two out of three. This is a Rays team that's not playing well right now, and it's a Red Sox team that's not playing. I mean, Red Sox are playing decent ball right now. You know, they kind of let it slip up in that Sunday matchup. They had a rest day. They just need to get back to where they were in that Friday-Saturday game, because you know, that was the Red Sox team we're accustomed to seeing in those games. And if they can bring that to the table, then they've got a chance to take two out of three, or, you know, depending on what Dubront does, maybe see a little sweep of the old Rays.
Yeah, so, you know, we're getting to that point in the season. There are about 25, 30 games where you can't really say, well, it's just a small sample size anymore. You know, the Red Sox got to start stringing some wins together. But with that being said, that's going to do it for us today, guys. We're glad that you tuned in to listen for our first show in a couple weeks. I'm Ian Barber.
I'm Ryan Blazron.
And we will see you. You know, as always, this show is brought to you by StandingOSports.com. Visit them at StandingOSports. And be sure to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on iTunes. Later, guys.
Peace. Encore. Encore. We talk about Mookie Betts, dude?
What?
Do you know who that is?
Mookie Betts?
Yeah.
No.
God, I'm going to drop a knowledge bomb on you, dude.
Who the fuck is Mookie Betts?
Fucking second base prospect for the Red Sox. He reached base in 55 straight games, batting like .450.
He's good.
Dude, can you
He's
look
like...
up Mookie Betts' stats? Like, you're just disrespecting him right now.
How do you spell his fucking name? Oh, wow. I typed in Mook and he was the first result.
Yeah, dude. I sat in fucking 407 in 20 games.
21, Portland. Average, 407, 20 games. Whatever, dude.
I think our farm, if we could put together our farm system and have them play the Red Sox, I think they might win.
Maybe if you threw like Jackie Bradley or Xander Bogaerts in there too.
No,
I don't know. They might.
I don't care, dude. Felix Dubron versus Ken.
Yeah, well, you have me there, dude. I might just have to throw that last part in the show. Just
who wins? All right. Oh. Felix Dubron in the Boston Red Sox and Rui De La Rosa in the Red Sox farm system. I don't know.
And Mookie Betts.
And fucking Mookie Betts, dude.
Oh.
That's crazy, though, dude.
Did you see that thing with Cano on the...
No.
It's pretty funny, dude. The Yankees fans are such dicks, dude. They're like, boo, we hate Cano, we hate you, we hate you. And then he comes out and they're just like, sup, dude, I love you.